Hey everyone, and welcome back to episode 7 of Not Your Parents' Financial Advisor. It is the new year. It is 2025, so this is the first episode of the new year. I'm your host, Alex LaRosa, and today we're going to go over a few different topics. One, we're going to have our tax planning tip of the week, like we normally do. And then we're going to get into a discussion around target date funds. For those of you that are unaware of what they are, I'm actually going to dig into one of the most widely used target date funds there are, and then explain exactly what you're invested in and why, as a financial planner, I hate them. Time for the tax planning tip of the week. This one's going to be around charitable giving or charitable donations. Now, before we get started, I always tell my clients and prospects, and everyone really I talk to, you should not give to charity just because you can get a financial or a tax incentive to do so. You should be doing it from the goodness of your own heart. It's because it's something that you want to do. Now, if it's something that you want to do and you can do, then doing it in a tax-efficient way is better than not doing it in a tax-efficient way. Now, remember, just because you're gifting to charity, it doesn't mean you're reducing your taxes one for one. So you're still paying taxes. You're getting a slight deduction. You're still giving away your money. That's why you shouldn't do it just for the financial gain. But what I want to talk about specifically is gifting appreciated stock. One of the biggest issues I see, you know, especially with younger high earners that are executives, they have highly appreciated stock, large concentrations of a single stock. They're gifting to charity every year, but they're writing checks for cash when they simply could be gifting appreciated stock. Now, what that means is you buy a stock, it appreciates. Remember we talked about before, you owe capital gains tax if and when you sell it. Well, a way you can avoid paying those capital gains tax and give to charity and get a charitable deduction is by gifting appreciated stock in lieu of cash. You can call the charity. You can say, hey, I want to give appreciated stock. Most charities accept it. They can then sell the stock and use the cash without paying any tax because they are a 501c3 company. So let's go over an example. Jane Addams purchases $10,000 worth of a stock 5 years ago, and it's now worth $50,000. If Jane were to sell the stock, she would incur a capital gains tax on the $40,000 of appreciation. Assuming a capital gains tax somewhere around 20%, she would owe $8,000 in taxes, leaving her with $42,000 to donate. However, by donating the stock directly to the same charity, Jane avoids the $8,000 capital gains tax. Additionally, she can claim a charitable deduction for the full $50,000, maximizing her tax benefit and enabling her to make a larger gift to support her favorite causes. Now, keep in mind that when you gift appreciated stock, there is a difference in gifted cash. When you gift cash, you can deduct usually between 50 and 60% of your adjusted gross income. When you're gifting appreciated stock, it's between 20 and 30% of your adjusted gross income. So there is a little bit less of a deduction. But if you're also simultaneously avoiding any capital gains that you would pay in the future, and for those people that have high concentrated positions, getting some of that stock out of your estate and out of your portfolio so you're a little bit more diversified, it's a win-win-win. And the charity wins as well. They get the same amount of money that you would if you were just giving in cash. So that is how you can use appreciated stock to gift rather than just writing a check. Now, one more thing to keep in mind. You have to be itemizing deductions to take charitable contributions. So if you're using the standard deduction and you're just giving $2,000, $3,000, likely you're not going to be able to deduct that if you're not above the standard deduction. So it's always important to check with your tax preparer and your financial advisor to make sure, you know, it makes sense how you're giving and when you're giving for your situation. And today I'm going to break down target date funds and why, as a financial planner, I hate them. I'm also going to go into one of the most widely used target date funds and actually dig in and look under the hood and break down the nuts and bolts of how exactly you are invested if you hold one of these funds. So before we get started, let's talk about what a target date fund is. A target date fund is a type of investment portfolio designed to automatically adjust its assets allocation based on a specific target date. Usually the investor's expected retirement year, becoming more conservative as the date approaches, essentially aging with the investor and minimizing the need for manual rebalancing throughout the investment timeline. Now, on a surface level, they're great because they take the guesswork out for a lot of people who lack any kind of financial literacy. They're better than cash, which, believe it or not, before target date funds were introduced in the early 2000s, cash was the default option. So we had a lot of people that actually came to us and said, hey, why is my 401k not growing? People think 401ks sometimes are an investment, and it's not. It's a vehicle. You actually have to choose the investment. So they come to us and say, hey, why is my 401k not growing? Well, it's been sitting in cash. You never actually selected your investments. You went with the default option, which is cash. So these replacing them is a much better option than cash. I will say that. So on a surface level, they're great. But for people who just have a little bit of financial literacy and actually look at these things, I believe that there's much better options out there. So if you're watching this and you're not sure if you have a target date fund or that's something you're invested in, do me a favor, pause this video, go log into your 401k or 403b site, look at the funds you're invested in, if it's one or multiple. If that fund has a date next to it or a year, 2055, 2035, 2045, you name it, that is likely a target date fund or a life cycle fund is another name for them. And it's, again, it is the default option in almost 95% of plans that I come across. And most people do not take the time to change out of it. So from a financial planning standpoint, let's break down five reasons why I hate these. So number one, it goes against the cardinal rule of financial planning, which is everyone's situation is different. And these make the assumption that age is the only factor when it comes to determining risk and return and asset allocation, when we know that's just a piece of the puzzle. It's just like one cog, right? There's things like everyone has different incomes, everyone has different goals, everyone has different lifestyles, everyone has different health concerns. Your age should not be the sole determining factor of the risk you take and the way your portfolio is set up. Number two, some of them are expensive, which the average expense ratio being about 0.45%, which seems okay, but I've seen some of these upwards of over 1%, which is incredibly expensive for a passive investment vehicle. And a lot of the times, it's usually in those plans that are from insurance companies, TIAA, Equitable, those kinds of companies. They have high fees. Number three, they use an old, out-of-date investment philosophy when it comes to what is aggressive versus what is conservative, and who needs to be aggressive and who needs to be conservative. Number four, people who use them don't understand them. Simple as that. They don't know what they're investing in. And number five, I believe with just a little bit of work and knowledge, you can build a better allocation that is suited to you and will outperform these over time. So now, let's break down one of these funds. What we're going to look at today is the Vanguard 2055 Target Date Fund. This fund is designed for people with retirement dates between 2000 and 2055. So around the age of 35, which is what I am. So that's why I'm breaking down this fund, because I know people in my age group who have had this fund. The fees are very reasonable. Vanguard's great with fees. I will never complain about that. 0.08%, can't get better than that. Very low expense ratio. But let's look at the fund holdings. So this fund is actually made up of four other Vanguard funds. The first fund and the largest holding is the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, coming in at 55.6% of the fund. Number two, the second largest holding is the Vanguard International Fund, coming in at 34.6% weighting. Number four is the Vanguard Total Bond Market Fund, coming in at 6.8%. And finally, the smallest holding, Vanguard Total International Bond Index Fund, coming in at 3%. So that's the holding. It's a fund made up of four other funds, which are made up of a bunch of different investments or stocks or bonds. So it is well diversified, I will say that, before we move forward. And now we're going to get into the performance of this fund over the last 10 years or so. And before I get started on that, I just want to make a disclaimer. These are numbers directly from Vanguard's site or Morningstar or wherever. They are not numbers I made up, and past performance is no indicator of future results. I'm simply just stating numbers and giving you my opinion of why those numbers are what they are. So, performance of this 2055 target date fund from Vanguard. Year to date, this is, again, I did this at the end of 25, so it's pretty much the end of 2024, so it's pretty much the entirety of 2024. Year to date, up 17.83%. The one-year performance, so going back 12 months, is 23.76%. Going down to the three-year performance, these are now annualized numbers, so per year, the last 3 years, it is averaged 6.54% annualized. Going back 5 years, 10.28% annualized. And going back 10 years, 8.89% annualized. Now, looking at these numbers by themselves, most people say, hey, that's pretty good. I would take 8.89%, 8.9% per year over the last 10 years. Absolutely, I would take that in a heartbeat. Year to date, 17.83, sign me up. That sounds great. But let's just, for, you know, comparison's sake, let's just match it up against the S&P 500 index. The same company, Vanguard's S&P 500 index, which tracks the S&P 500 or the 500 largest stocks. Because usually I want to compare what funds do to the overall market and what funds do to other allocations. So the S&P 500 year to date up 28.02%. The 1 year, so the last 12 months, 33.84%. The last 3 years coming in an annualized number, 11.39% annualized. And the last 5 years, 15.72% annualized. So comparing the two, which again, from a financial planning and a portfolio construction standpoint, really isn't fair because it's not the same type of risk or return. But just for comparison's sake, you can see the S&P 500 blew it out of the water. So this fund completely underperformed the S&P 500, which again, for comparison's sake and risk and portfolio construction, isn't a fair comparison. That's not a fair benchmark because it's not the same level of risk. But again, I just wanted to compare. Now I want to look at a portfolio that I have modeled for some of my clients that use Vanguard funds. Again, this is not to say, hey, I can do better. This is no guarantee. This is just comparing how these funds that I have recommended for clients, which is a little bit of work and a little bit of, you know, so I basically took them from, hey, you're in this target date fund. I think you can do a little better. Here's how these funds have performed over those same time frames. So my model portfolio comes in at 60% of the Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, followed by the small cap index fund of 15%, followed by the mid cap index fund of another 15%, and finally the international index fund at 10%. Performance year to date. And again, I'm going to put the numbers up here. I'm going to leave the numbers for the target date fund, 2025 target date fund on the left to compare them. 1 year, 31.95%. 3 year, 9.29% annualized. And the 5 year, 13.6% annualized over the last 5 years. Now, let's just compare that. Now, you may say, okay, well, looking at those numbers, you know, 13% per year versus 8% per year, or even in the 3 year, you know, 9% per year versus 6.5. What does that mean? It's just a few percentage points, right? Well, what I did is, again, using Vanguard's site, I plugged in what $100,000 would look like invested over 10 years. In this comparison, I'm also having the individual max out the 401k every year with the maximum amount. This year is $23,500. So starting with $100,000, you're maxing it out and you're invested in either the target date fund, right on the left, or you're invested over here on the right with the model portfolio that I just ran through. So after 10 years, your Vanguard 2025 fund would look somewhere around $589,522, according to its annualized returns on the site. If you compare that to the model portfolio that I put forward, which is a little bit different, you're looking at $704,171. So we're talking about six-figure difference, right? Over $100,000 of difference in just those returns, because me and my clients did a little bit of work and found funds that are better. I'm also going to get into why this target date fund has underperformed and I think will continue to underperform going forward in a little bit. But now that's just 10 years. Imagine 20, 25, 30 years of this. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is a massive difference when you go to retire. So why is this fund underperforming? Why has it underperformed? Why is it not doing as well? Two reasons. The biggest one, the second largest holding, is 34% international stock index. Now, If you remember back in the beginning of the video, I said one of the reasons I hate it is it uses an outdated investment philosophy, in my opinion, an outdated investment philosophy of what is aggressive versus what is conservative. Now, for some reason, I think it was 30 years ago, someone, you know, when they were putting together portfolios, the research showed international stocks are more aggressive. And while that is true, because they have to deal with currency risk, different governments, all kinds of stuff, while that is true, aggressive doesn't necessarily mean better growth. And it shows in this. So 34% of your fund, if you're in the target date fund, is international because it's saying you are young, you can take risk and be more aggressive. So we're going to give you more international. Well, international has not been the place to be. It has severely underperformed. I mean, quite frankly, it's gotten its kicked by the US over the last 15 years in terms of growth. So let's compare. 34% international, but let's look at the international index fund. Year to date, up 7.92%. Compare that to the total US stock fund, same Vanguard fund, total US versus international. Total US fund is up year to date 27.63%. 20% difference. 20%. Okay, that's just 1 year though. Who cares? So over the last 12 months, the international index is up 13.43%. Compare that to the US, 34.42%. Okay, now we're talking about it 20% again. Longer term, 3 year. The 3 year annualized return of the international index, Vanguard International Index, is 2.9%. 2.9% annualized. Compare that to the US, 10.36% annualized. All right, how about the 5 year? 5.71% annualized from the international index versus 15.17% annualized for the US total stock fund. Let's go longer term, 10 years. Last 10 years, the international fund has returned 4.95% annualized. Compare that to the US, which is 12.85% annualized. That is a major difference. I wasn't joking. The US has absolutely destroyed the international index when it comes to returns and growth over the last decade plus. It's really the last 15 years. There's a lot of factors to go into it, right? I'm not going to sit here and make predictions and say the international fund will, you know, yeah, the last 15 years it didn't do well, but what about the next 15, right? Because you can make that case for any investment. But here's the reality. You have to look at where the growth is going to be. Now, what is the international index fund made up of? Well, the majority of it, somewhere around 40%, is developed Europe. Now, if ask yourself, again, I am not an economist. I am not making any kind of predictions, but ask yourself, over the next 10 years going forward, do you see more growth in developed Europe or the US? Talking about a continent that has 50 plus different governments, all doing different things. Some of them not very pro-business, some of them are. Needless to say, the growth has been in the US and I believe it's going to continue to be there for the future. It also has Asian markets and things like that. But the reality is what you have to look at, and this is what's changed over the last 10, 15 years, the US and the dollar being the reserve currency, the US, if we go into a recession and you don't think that Europe's going in and Asian markets are going in as well, you haven't been paying attention. So if we have a bad year, they're going to have a bad year too. So the argument for having international can be used from a diversification standpoint, but as you can see from the models that I recommend, it's usually around 10%. Again, that is not financial advice. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm just showing you the difference in holding 34% international versus 10 as it was a drastic difference over the last 10 years. Another reason that this fund is underperformed, and it's smaller, and it's going to be larger for those who have the lower number of years to retire. So if you have like a 2035 fund or a 2025 fund and you're watching this, this is going to be a major difference for you. So 10% of the 2055 fund is made up of bond funds, which I don't think anyone in the 30s needs any kind of fixed income in their portfolio. Fixed income is usually there for downside protection or just, you know, asset protection where you have a risk off scenario where people are selling equities and buying bonds. It helps buffer your portfolio. But as we saw in 2022, bonds can go down as well. They were down almost as much as the market. Let's look at the return of these bond funds from Vanguard. And I think just reading these, you'll probably figure out how, you know, this is why I'm underperforming. Year to date, 2.96%. Year to date, I don't know about you, but that's pretty low. 1 year, 6.81%. Not bad. Seems good. Well, now let's go out 3 years. Over the last 3 years, you've actually lost 2.03% annualized. Over the last 5 years, you've made 0.013% annualized. Over the last 10 years, 1.41% annualized. So 10% of your portfolio is quite literally not making you money. Not on a real return basis because inflation's eating it away. If inflation's been 3% and you're making 1.4, you're actually losing money. So 10% of your portfolio is just straight up not making anything for you. That is why these target date funds are underperforming. So, and again, it's only 10% of your portfolio, but with a little bit of work, you can put yourself in a better position for the long term. Now, those of you that have a lower year, so 2040s, 2030s, check your target date fund because I guarantee you're now holding anywhere between 25 and 30% fixed income, which is a significant part of your portfolio that is not outperforming inflation. Now, you may be thinking, Alex, you're a financial advisor who gets paid to help people manage their investments. So that gives you a bias towards a passive do-it-yourself investment fund like the 2055. And while that is sometimes true, in this case, I'm not the only one saying it and pointing it out. Here's an article from Morningstar from one of their vice presidents of research, not a financial advisor, just writing a research report. And this article points out the discrepancy in returns between Vanguard and Fidelity's balance funds and their target date funds, stating that the balance funds have outperformed the target date funds by almost 1.5% per year. So these are balance funds that also include fixed income and international. Right? It's a balanced fund versus their own company's target date fund. Well, the reason being, again, this article points it out, the target date funds have a significantly higher allocation to international stocks, and that is why they've underperformed their balanced funds. So I'm not the only one saying it. There is, you can do your own research, you can see it. There is plenty of evidence out there that these target date funds are not for everyone. Going back to the beginning of the video, I think it's a better alternative than cash. I do. Because there's a lot of people that just have no idea what they're doing when it comes to investing or picking investments. And I see some people make way worse decisions than just sitting in their target date fund, like going 100% fixed income for no reason in their 30s. Lots of mistakes. But with a little bit of work, a little bit of research, I believe you're going to set yourself up better. And always take into account your full financial plan. How long do you have? What's your income? What's your goals, right? Not just your age. Your age shouldn't be the only factor in determining what your allocation is. Now, if you like this video, please like and subscribe. I'm going to be coming out with more of them, kind of digging into some of these funds and what people are invested into. But more importantly, if you're a high earner and you're younger, say 30, between 30 and 40, and you have a 401k and you're invested in a target date fund, find my information in my bio, schedule a call with me. I do a free portfolio review where I will look at what you're invested in and give you a free allocation of, hey, I think you'd be better suited to do something like this. Who I am.